I'm not gonna say it sucks.
I know, I'm just playing.
Bon vivant?
Bon vivant.
Okay.
Call me music right now. No one knows what that is, and I'm not a bon vivant.
Okay, here we go. Yo, 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 nerd up. What's up? This is the Nerd AF Podcast, a podcast where we dig into all things nerd, video games, movies, comic books, you name it, and discuss the broader cultural implications at large. For the last time, I am your host, Brad Bogus, joined here, as always, with Hugh Johnson and Richard Williams. You guys want to say
what's up, guys?
Hello, hello.
And today we have our guest is Dylan Owens. Dylan is bon vivant, a writer, a music writer here in Denver. Local badass and friend of ours. How you doing, Dylan?
So good. Thanks so for having me, guys. Feels right.
Dude, I love your jacket. I love your wavy hair. I'm just happy you're here right now.
I think this chair should be backwards.
Oh, yeah.
It should be like in detention, maybe.
I love it. I love it. So we got some interesting stuff going on this week that we want to dig into. We're going to go into our Week in Geek, discuss the things that we geeked out over this week and what we were digging into. We're also going to talk about Kendrick Lamar and his historic Pulitzer Prize win. A lot to go over there. And lastly, we're going to discuss the problem with Apu on The Simpsons. This is recent news. We'll get into that here a little bit later. But kicking off the Week in Geek, Hugh, why don't you talk about what you had going on this week?
I am coming closer in my quest to watch the entire MCU before Avengers Infinity War hits. Just saw Doctor Strange this past weekend. Really enjoyed it. It's a little bit different from the others.
The inception of comic books.
Right, right. I was drawn into the character within the first 15 minutes of the movie. Amazing film. I think the two I've got left are Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and Ant-Man, which is kind of, I don't know, but who knows. It's got Paul Rudd in it, so it's got to be funny.
It's good.
And maybe I should get some of those. Is there one with like Mark Ruffalo, some of those old Hulk movies? Does that technically count or no?
No, it's still canon, the one with Edward Norton.
Okay.
Edward Norton's Hulk was good, man.
I loved it.
It was understated, but yeah, I actually dug it for that reason. It was different.
Is Spider-Man 3 canon? You guys count that? No, is that out?
Dear God, the musical number and everything?
Oh, I've only seen
Homecoming. McGuire?
Homecoming. That's it, Spider-Man
Homecoming. I don't know. I loved Amazing Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield.
Dude, it's so good.
Emma Stone.
It. Yeah.
Their chemistry was just off the charts. Gaming stuff. God of War is coming out this week.
I know.
So that's going to be pretty sick. It's one of those games that makes me a little bit jealous as an Xbox owner because it's only on PlayStation 4. Richard just loving life. But like, I grew up in that age where exclusives were a big deal. There was a diversity on consoles, not just in terms of the hardware, but the software. If you wanted Mario, you get Nintendo. If you wanted Sonic, Sega, Crash Bandicoot, PlayStation, that sort of thing. Now most of the big name games are on every console. Overwatch is on everything.
Kid Courage, if you're into the TurboGrafx-16.
Right. but it's nice to see like a big exclusive like game title just coming this week. So shouts to God of War. And also Destiny 2 just announced that their new DLC is coming out May 8th. So super excited about that. And always got a crazy video game gaming news story for you.
All right.
And that's this guy tried to rob a GameStop. Well, I think he actually succeeded in robbing a GameStop wearing a plastic bag over his head. It didn't conceal his identity at all, but he's still at large for some reason.
So, Where?
I want to say it's like Georgia or something.
Who would have thought it would have worked?
Somebody from
so everyone's
Georgia.
Clowning it, but you haven't found him yet. So.
Hey, man, he also robbed a place risking suffocation. Like, that's a real deal. That kills babies nationwide.
Right. He runs out of the store and is passed out on the sidewalk.
And last what thing, happened? Man, I love that SNL, particularly Black Jeopardy.
Oh my God,
T'Challa! Oh my God. It's hilarious.
So it was fucking so hilarious.
Awesome. That was really funny.
Dude, catch that!
Oh man, they did Black Jeopardy, and as always, they have the white people category. And T'Challa trying to interact on that category was some of the funniest fucking comedy I've seen written in a while.
It's like the cops are asking you for details on the suspect. What do you do? And it's just like, clearly, I help. Not only do I aid this man, or tell him what I know, I also aid him in apprehending the culprit. Because after all, our law enforcement are just trying to help us, correct? It should be. But yeah, that's my Week in Geek.
YouTube that shit is really good. Richard, what was your Week in Geek?
I'm going to kind of start off with A Quiet Place. So I'm going to try not to ruin it, so spoiler.
Thank you.
A little bit. One of my favorite things, I'm just going to say all around about it, it should be, you know, the aliens or monsters attacking people, but American Sign Language, because that's what I took in college. That was my second language. And so to get to see it, and I can't believe how much I forgot. I was actually signing, like, in a movie, and, like, God bless you, Emily. She was just like, what the hell are you doing? But I was, like, trying to remember. Like,
it's, like, the only acceptable communication during a movie
right.
in a theater.
Sign language.
If you're just in there sign language.
Yeah.
Sign language, I don't think they'll kick you off for that.
I'm, like, completely speaking out loud.
The Alamo's not super heavy-handed about sign language. You know what I mean? Like, they are about right. texting and everything else.
Just keep it low. Right. Keep it low out of you sight.
But it was a beautiful movie, and just so you know, Please don't chew ice during this movie because we can all hear you. That and popcorn.
Because it's so quiet.
Yeah. It is literally that quiet. And I, like, literally, man, people were chewing ice and were just like giving stink eye. I'm like, really? You're ruining my
movie. Here's a good rule of thumb. Like, so imagine funny. That there's that's a microphone in your mouth and it's broadcasting to everyone in front of you.
Well, that's like the only thing that I know about that movie is I read a piece by former Denver Post music editor Matt Miller for Esquire. Mm-hmm. And it was just about how, it was literally just about that. It was like, people, I can hear every like candy piece that's in your mouth during this movie. And like, you have to find the right moments to chew.
That's what I was doing. I was eating pizza. It, like, literally, like, you hear, like, the monsters, and we're, like, there's, like, another scene by the waterfall and stuff, and I'm just, like, trying to hurry up and eat my pizza. You know, Emily was, like, had her food. She's, like, eating. I'm, like, I can hear you. And she's, like,
or if it's a draft house, it's, like, you have a fondue pot.
Right.
And, like, three-layer nacho. Like, there's right. so many, like, complicated foods.
So, like, yeah, no, I love, are you talking about Alamo Draft House?
Yeah.
I, like I said, from Austin, I know Tim League, I've met him several times, who started off Alamo Draft House. But they don't play around there. Oh, they will kick you out. You get one warning.
Unless you're sign language.
Unless you
sign
have language. Sign language. which, you know, Austin has a huge deaf community.
Right.
Because the School of the Deaf is there. So, anyway, I love that aspect about it. I love how the creatures were drawn. It was beautiful. It was beautifully shot. It was a great story.
Was it really scary? Because I heard everyone talking about it being like the jump scare movie or whatever.
No,
but
I think
that was like the lamest way to market it ever.
Yeah, it was pretty lame. Everything is so appropriate. Do they have jump scares in it? Of course.
Sure.
But everything had a purpose.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so weird when you see this movie. You're just like, wow, I don't think I can ever be this quiet. Like,
yeah.
Something happens to you. Say an iron falls on your foot. What are you going to do? Can't scream.
Damn.
So,
you know, other things like that.
The big question for me, though, is it's done by John Krasinski. He's
I
in the movie.
Shazam.
But is all you see, like, Jim just running around from monsters?
Yeah.
Like, from the office?
Looking into
that's,
the camera.
That's the hard thing for me. Like,
breaking
every
the fourth
time
wall.
I see that
no,
actor,
no.
he did such a good job. I'm like, why is Jim running? Why is Jim doing this?
No, it's not like that at okay. all. Yeah, because I know a lot of people were going into it. They're like, really? Really?
Jim?
I'm going to laugh at him.
Does he prank people?
No. I guess the question is this. Someone kind of brought it to me. We were talking about it. It's like, why do comedians make like the best horror movies right now?
Man, oh, yeah. comedy and horror are like a fine line.
Yeah.
I really think that. I mean, really, a lot of horror is funny. But like, to be really good at comedian, you almost have to, like, draw such a fine line of reality out into mm-hmm. your jokes to be super effective. And that sometimes can feel really scary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the real world is fucking horrific.
Like, timing, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to time, like, the jump scare.
That's
right. Time the fart.
That's right. Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And the piece of dialogue, which I'm very good at.
Timing the fart.
Listen for it, guys.
Please don't do that. Please don't do that right now.
Dylan, master of the art of timing the fart.
No, Dylan's like, it's already done.
Sometimes silence. Yeah.
That would be appropriate.
No, that
quiet place.
In a quiet place, that would be quite appropriate.
Jim farts silently.
Everyone's like, silent but deadly.
Don't talk about it.
Right. Don't talk about it. You can't talk about it. You can't talk about it. Don't even mouth.
So that means that if you fart in the theater, that shit's going to be loud as hell, too.
And you know
keep that in mind.
It was Dylan.
That's like,
don't go see
that would be hilarious.
You die because you say that, but you had to know that it, like, you had to let people know it wasn't you.
Like, I would just, I'll see a movie with me because I'm like, got this look, and I'd be like, mm-hmm.
Don't talk.
Right, I know. Chewing your eyes.
So, Dylan, what did you nerd out on this week?
Man, I feel like a freshman in a senior fraternity right now. I used to be so into video games, and like I had to pull myself away from it to have a normal adult working life. But I've started to creep back to it. We're going to talk about this later, I suppose. But I just timeshared a Nintendo Switch with my friend because neither of us could afford it, and it's shameful.
I couldn't do
by
it.
By any means.
Oh, I know.
I'm too greedy.
Well, it's also like it's for me. It's like being like having another video game console. It's like having like an endless like bag of cocaine in your house. There's like those experiments with like the mouse where you can hit the button and get the hit a drug. It's just like that. So I need it to be like moved away from me for like a week at a time, or else I'll just like go into a weird not a K hole, I guess like a Z hole for Zelda. But Zelda's amazing. I've been playing it so much. Breath of the Wild.
I've been playing OG Zelda recently off of an emulator on my Xbox.
Oh, nice.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that. And then I also like came across something. You were talking about films. These aren't like comic book films, but still nerdy in its own way.
Yeah.
Criterion, like the Criterion Collection. They do this like thing called Criterion Closet. Have you guys seen this?
No.
No, but I'm familiar with Criterion. My ex would get like films. Once a month.
Yeah.
I think you get like...
Oh, cool. There's a subscription. I didn't even know there's a subscription.
Yeah, it's like the go-to cinephile badge of honor is to be a Criterion collector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's got like, some great stuff on
there.
It's like hipster movie jams kind of.
Right, exactly.
You know, like
yeah.
Deep cuts, like the Radiohead Kid A of like neorealism or something. So like they have this whole series that's kind of like, I don't know if you guys, like I was a kid in the 90s and there's this thing on Nickelodeon where they would basically like let kids loose in toy stores.
Oh,
and they'd give them like a set amount of time and they're like, whatever you want. Like, as long as you're back here in 5 minutes, you get to keep all the toys.
I couldn't watch those because I couldn't live with the reality that kids could experience that and I wasn't one of them ever.
Just intense jealousy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Raging jealousy. Yes.
Right here, too. I would have hit him with a shopping cart. I'm going to take what you got in yours, too.
Right. Way get all road rash about it.
I start swinging chains. I don't care. Every action figure is Superman. Everything.
Comment on society. Yeah, it's post-apocalyptic toy store. So, like, they basically do that with this thing called the Criterion Closet, which is just full of every film that they've designated, like, Criterion Collection film. Mm-hmm. And they bring these directors in, and they basically... They pull out, you know, whatever, like, weird old Japanese movie, and they're like, they'll talk about it and, like, explain why it was influential for them. Mm-hmm. So I've just been going on there and just randomly writing down movies that these, like, directors have been talking about and
that's
just
amazing.
Then just watching them.
Yeah.
And it's been very hit or miss. I've only, like, watched three so far.
Sure.
Bicycle Thieves is, like, it's a kind of a classic old movie that's, like, an Italian film about... Just a dude that loses his bike, guys. And he has to find the bike.
So, like, spoilers, but just without the fantasticness.
Right. Yes, exactly. And it's kind of one of those movies that, like, you know, you're told that you're supposed to like, and you actually watch, and you're like, okay, like, I didn't go to enough film school to understand why this is good. But
right.
I'm assuming that they liked it for a reason. Two, like, really cool stuff. There's, like, an old French movie about called Eyes Without a Face about a French guy whose daughter like lost her face somehow. They don't explain it.
Tough.
And he like kidnaps people. He's a surgeon.
Jeez.
And he kidnaps women and like cuts their faces off and then tries to reattach them onto his daughter's face.
Oh. Dang.
So it's like early horror from like 1945.
It's like pre-human centipede shit.
Yeah, exactly. Human face-a-pede.
God.
That's been very cool to. I don't know. I just, you know, I've been in kind of a movie rut lately. I've just been kind of watching, you know, what's on the blogs, and that's good in its own way, but I've been trying to dig a little deeper.
Yeah. That's learning out.
Get some context, yeah.
No doubt. Right on. Well, I'll hit my Week in Geek, which was really digging more into the Wolverine Long Night podcast, which has been awesome. It certainly has its faults. Some of the acting's a little off, some of the writing's a little bad, but for the most part, especially the main characters, Agent Marshall and Wolverine and the Prophet, Just the way that the characters are all sort of structured, this podcast is super gripping. My wife, who's not into comic books really at all, has listened to all six episodes with me. Wow. Because she's also super into it. So it's told like this crime drama. You know, it feels like an SVU-style crime drama set in the wilderness of Alaska. I know we went a little bit over this in the last podcast, but I've learned a little bit more about, you know, as I've listened through it, about what's been going on. So essentially, like, Logan has just left New Orleans and tried to get off the grid. He knows Weapon X is sort of following him, but he has literally no memory of what his life is like and what's going on. Mm-hmm. This seems to take place at a point, like, at least it's so remote in Alaska, these cats don't even know the mutants exist yet. Right. So, like, there's all this shit going down. They suspect Logan because he's a fucking gruffy badass who doesn't talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. And Armitage portrays him fucking awesome. Like, I really dig what he does because it's not exactly like Hugh Jackman. You know what I mean? He's like this really angry, dark, sort of withdrawn, mysterious character. So they've kind of reintroduced Wolverine as mysterious again. And nice. And you don't know every single little thing about him like you do in the movies. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if you're really into the movies, like, this kind of takes place sometime between Origins and X-Men 2000. Mm-hmm. So that's about the time frame it takes place in. What's super cool about it, though, and I was noticing this when I was listening to it, is it's recorded in such a way that, like, it almost feels like they recorded this as a movie and then just dropped the visuals, because the sound design is spatial. Like, you get a sense of every single scene without seeing it. Mm-hmm. You can hear the scene, and they don't, like, overtly explain sounds. Like, sometimes there's just sounds in the background of someone, you know, bumping into something that doesn't really add context to the scene whatsoever, other than to create the space for you. Mm-hmm. And so I did a little research, and it turns out the person who recorded the audio for this podcast literally set up four different microphones, like a sphere around a space where the actors would get in, mm-hmm. and act out the scenes. So there's, like, scenes in a car, and, like, one of the officers in the front seat will turn around to talk to an officer in the back seat. You hear a difference in the direction of the voice in the recording. You know, it's just super well done.
Is it like ASMR? Is Wolverine like, my adamantium claws are coming out?
Yeah, no, he's not. I feel the tingling through my skin as they start to emerge. No, not at all.
No.
So that's been super fucking cool. I'm still trying to finish Ready Player One, and I've been getting my video game fix literally just through that book, because I haven't been able to play video games because I'm still moving out, which I'll be doing tomorrow morning. So hopefully in the next few weeks I'll be able to get back into my geek cycle and, like, play some stuff and catch up on more things. But that podcast has been super cool. Highly suggest you check it out.
Cool.
All right, so moving on, let's talk about Kendrick Lamar winning a Pulitzer Prize. This is the first time any artist who is not a jazz musician or an orchestral group that has ever won the Pulitzer Prize. Prize. It was a Pulitzer Prize.
Oh, man.
That's such a good BuzzFeed.
Damn.
Pulitzer Surprise.
And it was for his new album, Damn.
Right,
which
right.
I was just bumping on the way up here.
Yeah.
It's just such a phenomenal album.
It really is.
Kendrick, I don't know, like, he doesn't hit it as many one-liners, but you just feel like when you're listening to him, like, you feel like you're just a part of something just so artistic. I love how he always changes the beat, mm-hmm. changes the flow. I really love XXX on this album, God. Duckworth is cool, as well as his two singles, DNA and Humble.
Jeez. Yeah.
But This Hurts. As a Drake fan, Jay-Z's in the Hall of Fame.
God.
Kendrick wins a Pulitzer. My boy.
What are we doing, man?
I need that new album to be like straight fire.
I just don't think
fire.
Drake is dropping anything as significant.
You know, I think, yeah. If you take 10,000 Drakes and put them on 10,000 keyboards, eventually he's going to win a Pulitzer.
But
I don't know. Like, I don't know if one Drake can do it. It's crazy. It's funny you mentioned it was the only non-classical jazz. I was on the Wikipedia page, and I tweeted this really stupidly yesterday, but it looks like if you look at the list of, like, it has all the winners throughout the years, it looks like somebody was building, like, they're trying to put songs into a, like, fun playlist for their friends. They accidentally dropped it into their reading playlist, where it's just, like, all these classical albums, and then all of a sudden Kendrick Damn at the very bottom.
Right.
You're like, why? Like, how? Like, just, like, some Pulitzer, like, a guy that's on the board.
Combo breaker.
Like, somebody's grandson snuck on the Pulitzer Spotify and accidentally started using it to play like his music and like fold it into their Discover Weekly. And they're like, wait, there's like other music than classical music? Like, when did this happen?
My God, this is jamming.
Yeah.
Quite just like, truth, but
yes. I mean, it's no Miles Davis, but have you heard the beats?
I know. I think he's, like, slightly British. I like it. That's appropriate. It feels right.
Thank you.
No, that album, you know, it's remarkable and totally deserves it.
Right.
I think, like, you know, I was doing some reading on it, and if you do go down the rabbit hole of reading just, like, essays about that album and all the great reviews on it, NPR just did a 2,000-word, or I think it was in December, 2,000-word essay on religion as it relates to that album, which I just read. I feel like that's probably what got it on the Pulitzer like radar. They're like, okay, right. NPR is doing some theological deep dive into this album. It's not just like stupid hip hop. It's very good. And it really is. He's just like on a different level, honestly, on that. Like, there's just, it's the reason that people write about music, you know, those albums. It's not easily decoded. You can listen to it just like as bangers, like playing a fighting video game if you want.
Right.
But it's also good, like, if you're, you know, just really want to try to dig your teeth into something and try to understand where an artist is coming from. There's just the 10,000 different ways to hear that thing. Nice.
And well, what I think is so cool is that he did a special release where he reversed the track order of Damn.
Yeah.
So, like, you could listen to it in the opposite order, and in a way, it illuminates the same story in a different perspective. Like that he's trying to tell, which as I understand it, and I'm not like a super studied on Damn by any means, but it's essentially an album about the life of being black in America, essentially is what I heard, is where the significance lied behind the Pulitzer's decision, I think. And what's interesting about the reversal of that track list is that you just get that same story told a different way because it's told in every single possible way every day. But, you know, I too haven't been able to dig in enough. I was jamming it yesterday whenever we were moving a bit, and I hadn't heard it since I heard this news. I had only listened to it like maybe once in the past, and it sort of, you know, there were a couple other releases that came out that kind of caught my attention in the hip hop genre at that time. So I didn't really give it any attention. And then I listened to it while I was packing, kind of knowing this context about it. And I was just like, oh, wow, there's something really interesting going on this album that I didn't hear the first time.
Yeah, it's hard to wrap your mind around a lot of it. I mentioned, like, listening. Do you guys listen to music while you play video games? You ever do that?
Sometimes, yeah. I'll have that Pandora going.
So that's like on the game.
That's like if you're playing, like, chess, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, like, you put on Damn. I was listening to, like, this is, like, embarrassing. I was listening to a lot of Elliot Smith while I was playing Zelda.
That's not that embarrassing. That something dude, like, is, like, the most hardcore emo dude ever.
I know. Well, there's something about, like, Zelda that, I can get into it later. It's just, like,
please
beautiful.
Get into it now.
It's just, like, it's not even, like, so many video games are, like, objective-based and, like, you know, go do this thing. It's, like, meditative, almost. Like, you're just, like, out into the field and, like, wind blowing through your hair. Elliot Smith is like, be sad. And then you'll like go to like the coastline and like look over the waves and stuff.
When you just like get your first horse in that game and you're just like running through the fields and chasing dragons and stuff, it's just so amazing.
What? There's dragons?
Oh yeah, there's dragons. Sorry, spoiler alert.
No, it's okay.
Real quick, his last name is Duckworth, and that's one of the songs on his album. And that song is basically just about like how this coincidence, the fact that like his father and another person who like was supposed to kill him, like I didn't quite get that. I got to go to Rap Genius.
Yeah,
but who was supposed to kill him didn't, and like this coincidence spawned like a friendship between the two men, and then now they're both in the record in the recording studio while he's making this album, and like just to think about that like mere decision affected Kendrick's life so greatly. Now we have the greatness that is Kendrick Lamar. So
the spoken word sections, those are those people? And like,
I don't know if those are those people.
Like his cousin is one of them.
But like in his last like song, he talks about how the fact that this friendship between his dad and this other guy like and basically spawned his career because he needed his father to get to where he was, to where he is. It's just so amazing. I just love it, especially in this time, this climate, if you will. And that's all go there.
Right.
To have hip-hop going, boom. Like, as a hip-hop fan, I'm like, get it. As a Drake fan, I'm like,
motherfucker. Drake's always going to speak to, like, what the hot ice cream, like, I feel like if there's, like, a new ice cream flavor, then you're going to want to go to Drake for, like, how should I feel about this?
If you're an adult,
when there's a new, like,
like some substance.
Yeah. When there's a new, like, president, I feel like you can go to Kendrick.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Drake, 4 years. Give us 4 years. Let's get through this.
Do an awkward wiggly dance.
Scorpion's going to be badass. Scorpion's going to be
badass.
It
looks good, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it'll be great.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of interesting that in this... In 2018, where we are right now, with the conversations we've been having for the last decades about race, that it's now it's Kendrick Lamar that wins this prize. Right. I don't know if it's like, of course, because nobody else could, or if it's just like now someone's finally hearing it. You know what I mean? And that's the one that popped through.
Right.
But it says something. I mean, I don't know what it says yet because it's so hard to contextualize this kind of shit. But like, you have, you know, opposite forces occurring, right? So you've got the national discourse, which is fucking horrifying. But coming out of that is this like surge of fuck you. This is who we are. We are the people. We have the strength. Right. We're going to make a mark. We're going to force change however we need to do it. And the resulting sort of, you know, factors of that are things like, you know, Pulitzer Prize. Finally, they're paying attention to this genre of music that has been treated like trash, literally its entire right, yeah. existence. Never been taken seriously, never been considered. It's like horror movies in the Oscars, you know? Yeah. Until Get Out, like, there was literally really almost no traceable Oscar love whatsoever for that genre
exactly.
of movies.
Or,
it's kind of interesting.
Even, like, superhero movies, and I learned this today, there is a difference between a superhero movie and a comic book movie. Because The Incredibles... isn't based on any comic book.
Right, right.
But, of course, X-Men is a comic book movie
because
it is based on a comic book. So, right. yeah, I mean...
What was that Will Smith movie, Hitch or whatever, where he was a superhero? It wasn't Hitch.
Hancock.
That's what it was.
Oh, you did not.
It was
like a superhero
Dutch.
Dating advice guy.
He was a superhero dating advice.
His superpower was I could imbue others with the sense of how to date well.
No.
If you got Kevin James someone, that's a hell
that's
of a
right,
superpower.
See? That's a superpower. That's all I'm
Sorry,
saying.
Kevin James.
It almost feels like a bid for relevancy because, like, no one knew the Pulitzer even had a music prize.
I know, right?
Like,
that's a good point.
And it's kind of, sure. you know, like, I don't want to say that, that, you know, the Pulitzer isn't relevant, like, that this couldn't be a relevant category, but I almost feel like Get Out, and I definitely don't want to say Get Out wasn't a relevant movie because it really was and it was amazing, but I also feel like for them, they're like, shit, like, these are good movies and, like, we need to recognize them. And then it immediately, like 60% of the people that are paying attention to culture are like, oh, cool, like, they're also reading blogs and going to the movies that we're going to and mm-hmm. recognizing the pieces of art that right. deserve to be recognized.
Yeah.
But it was funny because like I saw that Pulitzer happen. I was like, wait, what the hell? Like, how right. did he? Is it like a journal? Like, did he write some article about it that got
right.
the Pulitzer? Or, like, I thought it was just
journalist.
For, like, yeah, exactly.
I thought it was a journalist side project of his.
I was like, damn, this dude is hustling.
Yeah. He's like Variety.
Right.
Column.
Right. Speaking of other historic firsts, we have Beyonce headlining Coachella.
Get it, Queen.
Dude, Queen Bey. My wife is like so utterly obsessed with Beyonce, and therefore by proxy, I have also become so utterly obsessed with Beyonce. And I got to see the opening of this performance, and it was, as always, fucking incredible and spectacular. And, you know, unapologetically black. That's what's been so fucking Good. Wonderful about Beyonce, yeah. you know? I don't know what the fuck happened. Maybe she sold her soul during Destiny's Child, and then all of a sudden, like, bam, she became Queen Bee.
Let's right. get in formation.
Dude. Yeah,
exactly.
She is commanding, though.
Have you seen that Saturday Night Live skit where everyone's, like, she did Lemonade, and everyone realized, they go, oh, my God, Beyonce's black? Like, before that, everyone, like, and all these white people, like, this one woman's, like, hiding. Obviously goes, oh my god, this happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, no, that's good awesome. For her. I love her. I think she's amazing. I've been listening since Destiny's Children.
Mm-hmm.
So
say my name.
I'm gonna say Destiny's Child. Yeah, that's a joke with my friends. Yeah. We're like Destiny's Children from Houston, Texas. So,
what is it about Coachella specifically that makes this such a historic thing? Like.
It's just like the de facto like live music event, I think, yeah. of like every year. It's just the biggest, and there's no bigger stage probably. Like I would argue that, I mean, aside from maybe the Super Bowl and I guess the Grammys potentially, there's just something about it.
So bigger,
like,
than Lollapalooza, bigger.
Oh yeah, like Coachella is like the end all be all for music festivals right now.
And it's not like a genre around Coachella, because I've always thought Coachella was like a hippie festival.
It's like a drunk girls with glitter all over their bodies festival.
Okay.
Whatever they like. They're like, what are the drunk glitter girls listening to? I need to get them in here.
So like bright lights.
Exactly. Like Drake, ideally, but maybe next
year. Man, you got to cut it out. You got to cut it out with this Drake.
Like, I'm going to come across this table.
Right? Like, right. You're going to have to get these hands.
I like Drake a lot. Like Drake.
So you're never going to see any punk rock on the Coachella stage?
I don't think so. I'm not like, I've never been, so I don't really know exactly what it is. But it's generally just like Cali vibes, right. Like Instagrammable bands.
So it's not out of line for an artist like Beyonce to appear at Coachella, but to headline is a...
Oh, I mean, she was supposed to headline last year.
Okay.
But she got pregnant.
Yeah.
She had twins.
Yeah, right. So there was like a big like build up like of waiting to see, and I don't know, maybe they just like were like, all right, we already got this in the bag, so like why don't we just do what we're gonna do last year?
Yeah, right.
But I mean, she's just like the biggest. She's the biggest and the best right now at like the biggest and best festival. So it was just like there's high expectation, high bar, and she did a triple sock out over it.
Yeah, no doubt.
Landed perfectly.
Right. I mean, she had Destiny's Child there. We mentioned that. She had her sister Solange there, and then she had Jay-Z doing their 2006 collab. Was it Crazy in Love, I think?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I
love that song. It's just so many great things from Queen Bee, from that whole family. I'm super happy. And that's one, like I say, like, not even begrudgingly, let's like, yes.
It's like Queen. The royal family,
Yas
really.
Queen. You know what I mean? But, until Drake takes over.
Dude, he's from Canada. He ain't ever taken over.
One of my friends, Marcus Harper, he writes in L.A., and he went to Coachella, and he was ridiculously happy. He goes, first black woman to ever, like, head this. And I remember a couple of people were like, should we even, why is this such a big deal? I'm like, it is, though.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing, because Coachella is mostly, like you said, Caucasian glitter girls whipping their hair back and forth. Right, right.
Which is Willow Smith, by the way.
Right. I'm going to leave that one alone. Right.
I was going to say, like, kind of like what we mentioned just now. We, like, hip-hop kind of owns the culture, like, if you think about it. And I think that all these things are just starting to realize, as we said before, especially like what needs to happen is the Grammys. The Grammys need to get up to speed. Like the fact that she did not win a Grammy, like, is just ridiculous at this point. Like, album of the year, it just needs to happen.
Lemonade was so clearly the most spectacular album of that year. Right. I think if you weigh all genres of albums of that year, Lemonade just fucking it stormed through. What was that, 2016?
I think so, yeah. I think it was like the very end of 2016.
Yeah. Fucking incredible work. So, yeah, I agree with you. They need to get on board.
Just, I think it's kind of funny. Like, everyone's, like, listening to hip-hop.
Yeah.
Even racist people are, like, listening to it. And it's like, are you even listening to what they're saying? And I'm like, what are you doing? You don't get to have both.
My favorite is... No coincidence whatsoever to you just saying racist people. But my favorite is like Tommy Lahren blasting 21 Savage. Like, have you guys seen that?
Oh my god, no, I haven't. But she is...
21 Savage. It's like, everyone loves hip-hop. Like,
it's true, I mean, like, the number one musical in America... Hamilton, hip hop, tons of shattered monocles because of it. I love that. It's a good thing. People need to be, you know, like, there's just no denying it. You know, there's and like in my eyes, it's been like the dominant form since like the 90s. You know, like when Wu-Tang was around, but now it's like NWA. Finally, like, you know, late 90s, hip hop started to get conflated with pop.
Yeah,
it started to become like the music of the people, and then finally, people were like. Oh yeah, and there's also like tons of intelligent, like really incredible hip hop out there too.
No doubt.
Like Kendrick, Drake,
Aesop Rock. I'm more into Aesop Rock myself than Drake, but that's just me.
Yeah, I mean,
they are the most vocabulary advanced hip hop group out there. Aesop Rock, no big deal.
Oh yeah,
Wu-Tang's right next to him.
Wu-Tang, yeah,
I believe it.
I like
I think Drake is. Jake Cole. Back on the line.
Uh-oh.
You know what I mean?
But like, how
use a few words.
Can he just like go like number one on the charts? Like, just
yeah, second he's taking the Mark Twain approach. It works. It's like Nickelback.
You just compare him to Nickelback.
Why not say jars of clay?
Oh, oh man, I'm actually sorry for that. I'm sorry for that. That was fucked up. I'm sorry for that.
Jesus.
The worst Drake is better than the best Nickelback.
Thank you.
I agree with that.
I'm like, oopsie daisy. Someone just said something.
Yeah. What was that?
Yeah, it's time to flip a table.
Leave Drake alone.
So Dylan kind of hinted at this earlier. We want to jump into a little bit more of a conversation about the idea of him timesharing the Nintendo Switch. So tell us about how that situation came to be, and then we can all share sort of our ad hoc nerd stories where we've grafted off of the backs of other nerds.
Yeah. Well, my friend.
Not
is
that
like,
you're necessarily doing that, by the way.
Oh yeah. No, I am what you want me.
This is a much more responsible situation, I think, in that you have two consenting parties sharing
an individual console.
Right
before I lose my job.
Super well, all right. Yeah.
You take my security deposit.
You didn't see the future well enough there, Dylan. That's very irresponsible.
I know.
I'm gonna need you to start balancing your checkbook in the future.
Sorry, Dad. I have my best friend's a chef. He's a lowly chef, and he doesn't get that many days off, and he doesn't have that much money to spare. And we were like just talking about things that we'd always wanted for a while, and we were like, man, we're both huge Zelda fans. We're like, Nintendo Switch would be incredible. We're also looking for a way to really like bring our friendship closer together, you know, to share something. So like a couple that goes to an adoption agency to find a child. We went to a Target. And
I'm to find
like,
a switch.
No. All right. We're going somewhere with this. Keep going.
This is just. I haven't thought about any of this. So, you know.
This is freestyle.
Yeah, I like it.
Extemporaneous.
I'm
freestyling. Yeah. Like Kendrick. And we went there and we found a switch and we brought it home and we plugged it in. We looked at each other and were very like, this is happening. we spent the first night playing it together. This is true. We spent the first night playing it together and we were like, we stayed up really late. It was just one of those classic moments of like, it was just like that middle school like energy that you get whenever you like on that like, those just like, like exactly what you want type like loves from your childhood. And, I had totally forgotten about it, and we played it forever, and then I was like, all right, like, how are we going to do this? We both paid $150 for this thing, and I basically was like, I'll get it the first week, you'll get it the next week, we'll switch on and off. It's a good excuse for us to see each other more often, because he's so busy, and he's got a wife and stuff.
Right.
He lives in Boulder, and it's worked out pretty well so far.
You haven't had a week where he's, like, had it, and then we're like, shit, I didn't get to play it this week, can I have it another week? And you're like, fuck, dude, I, like, cleared my schedule.
Yeah, come on. Not yet. I honestly, like I said, it is like having, like, a huge bag of cocaine in your house. So, like, when I'm trying to get, like, stuff done, I'm like, yo, get this coke out of my house. Like, I don't want it to look at it.
Right.
And so, you know, and now that I'm freelancing, too, it's like, that can derail a week.
Oh, yeah.
Let alone a day.
So, you have to have some sort of willpower.
Especially
Breath of the Wild. Like, oh, my God, man.
So I'm actually not. I haven't been keeping up with Nintendo at all. What the fuck is the Nintendo Switch? What makes it special?
So the cool thing about it is basically it's a portable system and just a regular console. So it's hooked up to your TV and you wouldn't know the difference. It has controllers that slide into a little separate peripheral device and you can play with it like that. But then like as I discovered, I was like my girlfriend was like in our bedroom like working, and I wanted to try to like spend any semblance of time with her because I've been playing a lot of Zelda. And I was like, oh shit, that's right. And like clicking into like the little thing, the actual like there's a screen in there,
yep.
And you can just pull it out and play the entire system on a portable, which is so dangerous.
Oh wait, this is the thing that has like the little cardboard accessories
that's
and shit
coming
you
up
can
for
add
it.
To it, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the label. It's just gonna be that their virtual reality. So now you can
that is so cool.
Put virtual VR to it and like play Rock'em Sock'em Robots. I don't know if you're gonna do that with cardboard. Yeah, don't charge me $70 for cardboard, Nintendo. Like, come on.
Well, yeah, but if it's super modular and you can do a lot of stuff with it, like, yeah. I can kind of get it. But
right,
it's
right,
a bold move.
It's definitely yeah. Nintendo, like, wacky
it's
outside
very
the
Nintendo-y.
Ball.
That's right. Yeah,
like,
yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, it's very, like, Paper Mario-y.
Right.
Right.
Like, dude, that Super Paper Mario is dank. Like,
yeah.
I love that game.
Yeah,
that's
it was
such
a good
game.
It's way underrated.
Does anybody else have a story from your childhood or recently where you've had to borrow a video game system or co-opt your nerd from somebody else? Because I know I've got it. What do you got, Richard?
My comic books and my Blu-rays. Used to lend them out, like, in college. Like, oh, no, we can trade, you know, like, in college.
Yeah.
I stopped.
You were the one people were co-opting off of.
That's right, because I had it. I was there. I hate to say it. Was I a pimp? Was I the Blu-ray DVD pimp? And they're just like, oh, can I borrow my used to? And then they wouldn't give it back, and they're like, oh, I moved to Kansas. I'm like, oh, but you still have an interview with a vampire. Give me it back.
You know?
And just like,
That's why you got a new cat, folks.
Now I'm like this. Nope. Like, a lot of people who've been in my apartment see my collection.
It's impressive.
And I have that collection because I don't lend them out. But what I do lend out is my Vudu account, which has basically everything.
No doubt.
There. Not what? Everything.
That Vudu account's a treasure trove. I'm one of the honored recipients of said Vudu account. It's pretty great. It's a key to the castle.
I'm standing outside the pearly gates.
You might get in one day, Hugh. Maybe.
I got a lot of stuff. Not just
I got
for...
the depart from me. Hey. I never knew you.
I remember when I was a kid. There,
I'm just like, if I die, someone's going to have to get it.
Oh.
So I'm like this. I go, who want to be nice to me?
You might be on the will, dude. We just got keys. You got the castle. Right. That's a pretty good prize.
Some Ready Player One shit.
Like, yeah, right. Exactly. Right. I remember growing up, there was this kid in my apartment complex named Marius, and he had a Sega Master System, and I didn't have a Nintendo or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I used to always go hang out with him, and like I feel bad for the guy because he probably thought like, hey, this guy wants to be my friend, but I was like using him for Spy versus Spy on the Sega Master System because that game was so fucking awesome. Uh-huh. He also had these like Norwegian gummy candies that were just the shit, and you couldn't get them anywhere else. What? So I would eat. No. Okay. They weren't like that popular. They were like the special Norwegian local shit. Anyway, it was the real shit.
All right.
It was good. So I would use him for his Sega and his fucking Norwegian gummy candies. This shit was the bomb. I feel bad for him though. He's probably
right now.
I mean, yeah. Marius, if you're listening,
I knew it.
I never was your friend. I'm sorry I did that
our
to you.
Our friendship is a lie.
I'd be willing to reconsider our friendship as adults now, as I now have my own Xbox One. Oh. Unless you've got like a VR system, in which case, so it might be over for me.
Just kidding. Yeah, that happens all over again.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would definitely co-op someone's VR system for sure because I'm super fucking geeky about that. But I just can't put forth the Oculus and tower and hand controller investment that you have to do to like get to the point where it's really super awesome.
It's a lot.
It's a couple thousand. I'm not gonna drop that. But if somebody had some, I would timeshare the shit out of that. That would be a great way to do it. Yeah. I like that arrangement.
I don't have too many of those stories, man. No. I'm an only child. I got like mostly what I wanted. I got my dad to spend $90 on a Charizard card.
Nice.
So, I'm kind of that guy, unfortunately.
Not a bad deal, actually. Oh, my
God. It's all good.
Charizard's one for 100.
But I have like kind of like a part where me and another guy struggled, like another Pokemon story.
Yeah.
We played Pokemon on Game Boy. He used to just grind it out all the time, and he got his Charizard up to level 100, and he kicked the shit out of everybody, and it pissed everybody off. So one day, we had a sleepover, and he left his Game Boy there, and I threatened to release his Charizard, ending our friendship, but I didn't. But I did punch him in the face.
That's hard. Wait, just for having a that dope Charizard?
Hard. No, no. He tried to attack me to get his Game Boy back. I like, whap-pow! Just caught him with a little backhand.
It was just
it's just like fifth grade, man. Like,
he went Ultimate Instinct on him.
Oh, but that's incredible. My struggle is a real story.
So let's dig into this Simpsons story. A writer wrote about the problem with Apu, the character in the Simpsons, the Indian character that runs the convenience store. And the Simpsons sort of clapped back, tried to defend the idea that Apu is not culturally insensitive, and doing so through the mouthpiece of their most progressive character, Lisa Simpson. So I'd like to get your guys' thoughts on just in general what you remember growing up with Apu. Like, how did that character really affect the way that you culturally saw, you know, Indian people in your community or people who ran convenience stores in your community? Did it have an effect on you that you think characterized, you know, the Indian people, or do you think The Simpsons is right in their defense of Apu?
So first of all, they did say like something like to the effect of a character that was once appreciated and beloved is now hated, like has now become politically incorrect. And it's just like, for me, the problem with that perspective is that you don't know that it was so appreciated and beloved.
Right.
We're talking about Kendrick Lamar and Beyonce doing all these great things because the conversation has shifted.
Yeah.
And people who haven't always had a voice now have a voice.
Right.
And so it's difficult for you to make that argument where you say this character was always appreciated. I don't watch much Simpsons, full disclosure.
Sure.
But for me, Apu was always mostly known as the just thank you, come again.
That's
like,
right.
If I could just do that. Like, just kind of, he was just always the stereotype. And a lot of people will say, well, the whole show is about stereotypes, you know? Homer's kind of your stereotypical, like, just like middle class, like white American.
Right.
And it's just like, well, in that sort of regard, like, there aren't like 70 different like Indian people in the show, from my knowledge.
Exactly.
A lot of white people spanning the gamut. And
lots of yellow going on in the show.
Yeah. White, I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yellow.
Yeah. Apu is the right color for his race, but everyone else is fucking yellow.
I do not watch enough Simpsons to know that. Yeah. But yeah, like the box you paint people in is bigger, like for white people. Like, That's just kind of the idea I get. Like, and when you have one character that just kind of embodies the stereotype, you only get like one box, like a small box. Like, the way I see it is, if I don't act a certain way and people don't know me, if I speak a certain way and I don't act like stereotypically black, people have often said to me, "You're not black. Like you don't really act black. Like, why do you like do that?" And that's like people who are, you know, left side of the political spectrum, right, educated, non-educated, rich, poor, everything, because that sort of stereotype is so pervasive.
Right. This idea that every race is a monolith.
Right. And except, like, with the majority, with white people, like, you don't quite have that. You know, you have little subsections. You can say something about rednecks. You can say something about, like, Connecticut, like, prep girls and stuff like
right.
Glitter girls at Coachella. But, like, no one's going to come up to a white person and says, why are you not acting white? Like,
exactly.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, and so that's where I kind of see this whole Apu thing is, by making that character into this just this store clerk, you're kind of just painting that very small box for an entire race of people to live in.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. It's such a touchy, I don't know. You know, I think it's interesting right now, just being alive, talking about these things right now. It's all very sensitive subjects, and you want to be sure not to say anything that's you know, too wrong-footed, or maybe you haven't done the reading enough to have a nuanced enough perspective on it. But it is true, I think, that, like, you know, a lot of media that we've grown up consuming has just been white-centric, where it's like, you know, that's white is normal. Everything else is other in its own way. And so, you know, to have Apu be just this, like, very caricature of an Indian person, it makes sense in that regard. But, like, those, we've finally come to a place culturally where I think we're like, that's bullshit. And I think rightfully so, because white people aren't the only people in the world. And I think we've known that for a while. And now our culture is starting to reflect that from music to, you know, cartoons.
Right.
But, yeah, it's interesting because I, you know, we were talking about this beforehand. We were talking about how Warner Brothers, you know, did a better job of dealing with these issues whenever they showed a warning before one of their cartoons that was basically showing a lot of, you know, like the equivalent of, I think, of like minstrel shows in cartoons from their early 20th century, where they basically said, you know, we are aware that these are culturally insensitive, but to not show them would be to pretend like they didn't exist, and we need to, like, you know, look at them in the eyes and be better for it. And it's a shame that The Simpsons couldn't have a little bit more of a nuanced viewpoint of that, especially, like, with Lisa, who's such, like, supposed to be the voice of reason in that show.
Right.
And she was just so, like, weirdly ham-fisted with her response. It just seemed, like, crotchety and out of touch, which I would argue The Simpsons has been for a long time in terms of their humor, too.
Sure.
Which is super sad for me to say, because I love The Simpsons, like, more than my mother and father.
Well, and it's also kind of like a surprising thing to hear from them. Like, I would think that just due to the content and how witty and nuanced it has been in the past, that they would have owned up to this in a better way. You know, they would have been like, oh, yeah, this is obviously like, yes, we were previously insensitive. I mean, I have a movie I did in college. And we did this back in the day when it was, you know, totally acceptable for whatever reason socially to say something was lame or stupid. You'd say that is gay. And there were lines in this movie that we made that said that. And I don't like just pretend like I didn't make the movie. Right. If I show it to friends nowadays, I say, listen, I need to give you a really heavy caveat on this. We made this back when we were socially unaware of the fucking damage we were causing.
Right.
We said some shit in this movie that I am fucking ashamed of, but the movie itself we made, it's kind of fun. You know, if you can just look past this like awful problem that we've thankfully grown past now,
right.
You know, we can enjoy it together. And like that's not that hard to do. You know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't take a fucking PR mastermind to come up with what should be an appropriate statement to deal with your past. And I think when I grew up in Texas, Apu was the proxy for everyone who owned a convenience store in white culture. I mean, anybody who would talk about, you know, people who owned a convenience store, they would say, oh, thank you very much. Come back again. And like, it was Apu that they didn't know any other Indian people. They weren't like, you know, studying dialect and were like, oh, well, no, I actually have been to Bangladesh and I'm using the Bangladeshi dialect. I mean, it's like they're making a characterization of Apu, and I think that like The Simpsons should fucking own up to that.
Right.
Using Lisa's voice is fucked up too.
And it's about ownership. I mean, just take if you've messed up. I mean, let's look out in media and what have you. If you've messed up and you're like genuinely said, I fucked up.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, you know, and learn from it, then I think most people will be really forgiving of it.
Yeah.
But when you try to deflect.
Right.
And it's like, that was the back then in the time. I'm like, it may have been, but what time period are we in right now?
Right.
Have you learned from the shit that you used to do back then?
To own it is so powerful because you set yourself as example for other people.
Right.
You know, if you can say I fucked up legitimately, it gives them room to be like, oh, I don't feel so ashamed about it. Now I can admit it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We've all messed up. And you identify with that. And it's like, when I said this, I mean, back when, you know, before I knew I was gay, I was just like, you know, fag this, gay that.
Right.
I didn't know. Totally. And then I grew up and I'm like, ooh, man.
Yep. It's like going back and watching old 90s TV. Like, you know, if you watch Will and Grace, Will and Grace is fucking homophobic as shit.
Yeah.
And that was like, I remember at the time it was lauded because it was like, wow, this is the first show that like, you know, there's actual gay characters on. And, you know, even still, you go back and watch it now, you're like,
there's some parts of The Office.
Dude,
just talking about Jim. I'm just like, ooh, you wouldn't say that now.
Nope.
It's just like, ugh. But at the same time, though, like, given what we've said, it's also incumbent upon the progressive side to be forgiving.
Yeah.
And that's something I struggle with, too. Like, I know me and my friends on Xbox clown around about, like, Louis C.K. Like, he came out and, like, what he did came out, and he said he's sorry, and, like, my friends are always like, all right, he said he was sorry. And I was just, like, super unforgiving, like, no,
fuck him,
right, he did that. No, and they're right. Like, you can't always be like that. So to my friend who listens, I am sorry. But, like, I agree with what Richard said. We have to have the propensity to just own up to it and also forgive as well.
Yeah. Indeed. Or try to. I mean, it's hard to forgive.
Shit's a practice. It's not like you just turn that on and you're like, oh, I can forgive now.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it takes time. Also, like all things, to be able to truly forgive somebody, it takes time. I'm not saying it's always going to happen.
Sure.
But sometimes, depending on what it is, time is a healing, you know, factor to people. So. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, how long did it take Mel Gibson to get back into
That's still roughly not the amount of time.
Is he back into something?
He's like, he was in some like weird, like recently, like romantic comedy.
That's right.
Yeah. People were like, okay, so I guess like the shelf life of apologies is about 8 years before you can just forget everything that happened, and then you can be
back the rest of Hollywood. I'm like, nah, man.
No, I thought it was too soon. I'm Jewish. Like, I was not okay with it. I still am like,
so
no.
Is Brad.
I don't think that you should be.
What's funny is that I almost never really listen to the Joe Rogan Experience podcast that much anymore, but every once in a while he'll have a guest on that I'm like, I want to hear what that motherfucker has to say. And he had Mel Gibson on one of his podcasts, and it was only an hour long, which is, you know, quite a bit shorter than his usual. And the whole thing was only about stem cell research. And like Mel Gibson's now the fucking voice of stem cell research, and they didn't talk about a goddamn lick of anything else. It was almost like the only way he was getting this interview was if they kept the entire conversation to stem cell research.
Oh my god,
sliding past the elephant.
It's exactly right. You know, yeah, I hate the Jews, but stem cells. Yeah, right. You know,
can all agree that we love those things.
Very awkward. Right. Yeah, let's all have stem cells.
Right.
All right, so we're gonna take a quick break, and when we get back, we're gonna talk to Dylan a little bit more about the Denver music scene and why he thinks it sucks.
Back-to-back music episodes is a great reason to have back-to-back music sponsors in this spot. And this episode this week is again brought to you by the Trujillo Company, who's doing their first Denver headlining show in ever. This upcoming Saturday, the 21st, April 21st, at Larimer Lounge in Denver. And if you are a Denver listener, if you are lucky enough to be a Denver listener, we are giving away a pair of tickets, or, I mean, we could probably wrangle it into four tickets, if that's what you'd like, to the Trujillo Company show. All you have to do is play along with our game on this week's episode, Nerd a Song, sometime this week on one of our social medias, at NerdAFShow, everywhere. And, you know, keep listening to the episode, figure out how to learn how to play the game at the end of it, and play along.
We ready. We ready for y'all. Nice snapping.
Thank you.
That's good. We're back. Pleasure. We're back with Dylan Owens here. Want to talk about the Denver music scene. I said before we left that that Dylan believes the Denver music scene sucks. I don't believe I characterized that correctly, right? Dylan, how do you feel about the Denver music scene?
I think so. Cred check. I was a music editor at the Post for 2.5 years. I just left last week. I think that there's a tendency for people that are in the scene or directly around the scene to just mindlessly say that the Denver music scene is great. Like, no conversation about it. Just be like, of course, it's great. Look, we have so many bands. They're playing all the time. How can it not be great if there's all these bands playing at the same time? But I think that there needs to be a distinction made between the creators and the consumers here. Mm-hmm. I think that for a consumer of music, it's great to be in Denver. There's just so mm-hmm. much music happening, whether it be local bands or international or national bands. It's incredible, like, the amount of options you have in any given night.
As a punk rocker, I've been kind of amazed at the bands that come through Denver that never came through Austin. I'm like, fuck, I didn't get to see Rancid, like, the whole time I lived in Austin. Wow. That often. But, like, they came through Denver, like, you know, almost like, you know, it's every 6 months since I've been here. So.
Yeah, they reunited here, right? At Riot Fest. That was, like, their big show. But I think so. I think the distinction that I would make is the local scene is, I just don't think it's there yet. I think that, you know, we often get compared to Austin, and, you know, people talk about how, like, you know, Austin's live music capital of the world, and a lot of people would be like, Denver has a better, bigger scene than Austin. And like, in terms of venues, we actually do have more music venues here. Right. I just looked into this recently. We have more music venues. I think that, like, you know, again, if you're just a fan that wants to see whatever band come through town, you probably have maybe a better shot of seeing them in Denver than Austin, at least as good of a chance, I think. But in terms of the music that's being created there by the bands that are there, I think that Austin has the edge and then some. I think a lot of what Denver's local bands have done is kind of created an analog for national bands and just, like, filled that niche locally. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you like Queens of the Stone Age, there's, like, Citra is, like, a local band.
Yep.
And they're basically, but, like, they're just, like, worst version of Queens of the Stone Age. Like, you'll see a lot of this. I've told them this.
Yeah.
So, like, this is not, like, if they hear this, it's okay, because I told it to their faces online. I wrote an album review and I said it, and they read it, and they were like, they DM'd me and were like, thanks for writing about us, period, which is a very mature way to handle that.
Yeah, no doubt.
Claps to you guys. But yeah, you know, I just don't see, there's very few bands here that I think are really doing something interesting where somebody outside of Denver would be like, oh, that's dope. You know, there's a lot of people that are in Denver being like, my babies, like, look how good they're doing. Oh, my God. Right. Like, they're playing so well. But, like, you know, as soon as you get out of Denver and you don't, like, have any ownership over that music, I think it's immediately like, I've heard this done better by, like, 10 bands.
Yeah.
That aren't here.
What about, like, and I'm very unfamiliar with some of the locals, so I'm just going to throw out a couple that I've heard that I think sound pretty cool and relatively unique. But, like, Itch.io, what are your thoughts on them?
I think they're very unique. Like, I think that they're, like, one that we should own and like hold up, because what they're doing is fascinating. It's different. And they don't really have an analog outside of Denver that I know of. I mean, I'm sure that there's a combination of you know, marching band, mariachi band, like ghost rock or whatever, that you could like somehow be like, yeah, they're just like these guys. But they're like, I think, genuinely doing something interesting and different. I wouldn't necessarily catalog them as, you know, just another band in Denver.
Right.
Or anywhere.
And how about Slim Cessna? What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think similarly, there's a lot of that, like, I almost associate them and Gasoline Lollipops with like this this whole scene of like this like Americana, like rusty post-apocalyptic rough and tumble rock bands.
Yeah.
Which I think is like a very, you know, if Denver could have a scene or like a type of music that we can own, that's like a kind of unique one, you know, that not everybody has. So I think that they again are like pretty legit. And you know, they're not necessarily like, neither of those bands are necessarily who I think of. But they're also outliers.
Sure, sure.
And, like, rightfully are held up when people talk about them.
Yeah.
I think those guys are playing, like, Belize. Maybe that's Gasoline Lollipops on the regular. Like, there's some of those bands are starting to get into, like, weird circuits internationally that shows that they're doing something right.
Fuck, I'd play Belize.
Yeah?
Hire me to play Belize.
Oh, I thought you said you had.
No, I would. I would. I would love to.
Hey, I'll take you $200 right now.
There you go.
To go sing in Belize.
I'll go sing in Belize. I'll do that. I will not be good. But at least I can say I got paid to do it.
Yeah.
Is there anything happening in Denver on the hip-hop scene? Like, is there any good Denver hip-hop that you know of? Or?
So I did a profile on a rapper named Trev Rich about a year ago, who was, in my opinion, like kind of like the first like really promising rapper. Not the first, but like the first that kind of really came to my attention while I was a music editor. That he, you know, he signed a deal with Cash Money Records.
Wow.
And he got some steam going, and I really enjoyed the mixtapes that he had at that time, and just like a very like true like Denver guy, and very humble in many ways, and really wanted to bring the spotlight to Denver and the hip-hop scene that it did have. But like since then, his stuff has not really, in my opinion, like been up to snuff, and has kind of like fizzled out a little bit. There's a few other guys that are coming up though. There's a like Supreme Ace, who's decent. AP, Trace Chapman, these are names that you'll hear. But I again, like, I don't know if there's anybody that really is like above the fold. You know, it's funny that, like, I feel like this is very indicative of the Denver music scene, that Flowbots is probably the biggest, like, rap group here. Like, Flowbots is, like, the musical equivalent of, like, a Cube, like, those cars. They're, like, what is it, like, Nissan or Honda Cube or something? Where they're, like, oh, that was really cool in, like, 2003.
Right.
And, like, different.
But, that was, like, a weird shape.
And, like, Apple, like, took it up, and they did, like, a Cube version of, like, their computer. No one knows about that, I guess.
No.
Don't worry about it.
Pretty obscure one.
Don't worry about it. It was like, people compared it to a toaster. It's a weird, it was like a very weird random computer they made. But, you know, and like Flowbots, what they're doing, their most recent album is like interesting. It's like protest albums, and it has a really cool concept on it. But like, that's probably who people will think of when they think of Denver hip hop. And like, that's saying something, because they're like alt pop almost. They're not even really like rap,
right?
When I think of rap, I mean, they do rap, but they're not like hip hop to me.
They're like not even quite as hip hop as the Gorillaz.
Yeah, yeah. Somehow, you know, the Gorillaz have like an upper hand for once.
Right.
But like, yeah, I don't know. It's not to say that Flowbots shouldn't be making music. It's just that there's a lot of blind spots genre wise in Denver. Rock, like white rock, is not one of them.
Yeah,
there's like 10,000 of those guys here, and like two of them are pretty good.
White reggae, is that happening a lot too?
Yes, let's be real.
Yeah. So outside of Denver, I mean, obviously we don't only have Denver listeners, but what would you say are some of your most the independent acts that you've seen coming up that are the most exciting that we should be paying attention to?
So there's a lot of those. There's a lot of like amazing female artists right now, like incredible female singer songwriters.
Song title, and you make it nerdy. So like some examples we've given you has been like
Lucy in the Skyrim with Diamonds.
Lucy in the Skyrim with Diamonds.
Oh, interesting.
Talk Nerdy to Me. It's the End of the World of Warcraft as We Know It.
That's
stuff like that. Right. Corny stuff.
It's a good one. Hungry Like the Wolverine.
Exactly.
Duran Duran.
See.
You're
good. Yeah. So I already put these on the Facebook thread, though, so I kind of cheated.
Tonight you will be Minecraft.
Oh my god.
That's good stuff.
Mine's just dumb.
Good. Hit us with it.
Yeah. You know the song, Do You Know the Way to San Jose?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Do you know the way to Wakanda today?
I like it.
Wakanda forever.
Is Sprite nerdy?
I mean, there was a game.
I have a whole
SNL.
I got a Kendrick tie into this. My friend and I used to make soda rhymes with Kendrick songs. So we had some bars for Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe called Bitch Don't Drink My Sprite. And we're like, I'm a sipper who's probably gonna sip again. Lord forgive me, 23 flavors I don't understand. Sometimes I need a soda can. Bitch don't drink my Sprite. Bitch don't drink my Sprite. Bitch don't drink my Sprite. There's a lot of other bars to it, but we'll save those for
those are great bars.
That's phenomenal. I'm going to give you nerd points on that one just because there was a game back in the day on the Sega Genesis called Cool Spot. Oh, that was 7-Up. Never mind, that wasn't Sprite. Sorry.
You know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah, Cool Spot. Sunglasses. You remember that?
Yeah.
The little red spot with sunglasses.
Yeah.
That was a good game, actually, being a corporate shill.
One of those.
Thanks to 7-Up.
All right, so listeners, definitely engage. Make sure that you submit your song titles. We want to make sure the Trujillo Company, our friends, are able to get two really high class nerds in that audience. So make sure you contribute, and we'll pick a winner to get those two tickets. And before we sign off, let's go ahead and do
plugs.
Plugs. Shit, I couldn't remember the fucking word. I've been smoking too much weed. Let's do plugs. Hugh.
So you can find me at HughJohnson707. I know producer Vince is super happy that I got my social plug in there. Going to plug the return of Shaq Fu.
Oh my God.
The game was terrible the first time it came around in the day. But it's coming back and it looks kind of fun.
I would get into some Shaq Fu.
So I might have to play me some Shaq Fu also.
Did you ever play the Wu-Tang fighting game back in the day?
No, I didn't.
Dude, that game was the shit. It was on PlayStation 2 or 3 and it was like 36, it was 36 chambers something. I don't remember what it was. Fucking awesome though.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'll have to play that.
Each member of Wu had a different style. It was amazing.
So also going to plug Overwatch and Smite, two of my favorite games. I've mentioned them so many times in this podcast. Reason being, though, is Overwatch specifically just came out with Overwatch Retribution, which is about Blackwatch and some backstory stuff. It's a co-op minigame you guys can play online. I spent $60 on that game. I've gotten 5 new characters, a whole bunch of new skins, a whole bunch of new maps. Haven't paid an extra dime.
Nice.
That's not, we've talked about it before, like DLC content taking over.
Yep.
That's not typical in this day and age.
Not at all.
So shout out to Overwatch. And Smite is free, and you don't have to play to win. And it's always new gods, new updates, and like there's an in-game currency which you can purchase, which you can use to purchase gods and stuff. So shout out to these games that are still giving players bang for their buck.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, the community is the only thing that's going to allow these games to flourish. And when the game designers that really get that and don't just like run rampant with a game community and like nickel and dime them to death, that's some good shit.
As I shell out more money for the Destiny 2 DLC.
On Twitter, I feel you, brother.
I know.
On Twitter, you can find me at Storm78704. What I'm nerding out about is, I don't know why, I went back to see Afro Samurai, the cartoon,
and
Afro Samurai, the movies. I've been having, the best time. Like, Samuel Jackson just makes me laugh. Like,
I need to check those out. I've never watched them
before. There's so much. Like, a guy going around with a big teddy bear head and, trying to kill you with a samurai sword. I'm just like, oh, my God. I don't take acid, but if I did. that would probably be one of my dreams. I'm like, get away from me, teddy bear. let's see what else am I geeking out on. I'm still playing and loving The Evil Within 2. I still do get scared, but I don't know why. Like, recently I couldn't sleep, and I'm like, I'm just going to play it. I'm sick of being scared of this game and not playing it. And
right on.
Looking at the package, I'm like, you scare me. So I got up there, and I've noticed, if I just calm down, I'm fine. I can kill all the zombies. But if I get twitchy,
yep.
I'm like, they eat my face.
there's a survival lesson in there, I think.
Right. If you calm down, you'll be fine. There you go. So, yeah, I'm loving that. And last thing, Injustice 2, they have like this gold kind of thing right now that's going on. I've been having a great time. I've been leveling up Starfire, Black Lightning, who else? Dr. Fate. And I think that's kind of it right now. Those are my characters. So, anyway.
Right
who
on.
I fight with all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So I'm moving tomorrow, so I'm going to have a lot of time in a moving van listening to audiobooks. So I'm finally going to finish Ready Player One. And, you know, hopefully they'll release another episode or two of the Wolverine podcast so I can crush through that as well.
Nice.
But I won't be playing any games, unfortunately, probably until I get my shit all, like, grounded in Cali. But I'm looking forward to that because I think I need to brush up on my Rocket League because the guys that I work with apparently all compete on some Rocket League. And I'm only good enough to think that I should be better than I am. And so Rocket League is one of those awfully frustrating experiences.
Right, yeah.
Where I'm like, I'm supposed to be amazing, but I'm not. And so I'm constantly failing. So, yeah, I got to brush up on my Rocket League so I can actually compete. I won't really be talking about that on Twitter, but you can find me on all the socials at Brad Bogus. Maybe I will start talking about it on Twitter so that you have a reason to watch me there. Yeah, you can follow me definitely on my adventures to California on Instagram, at least, at Brad Bogus. Dylan, what do you have going on in your life, man?
Yeah, so Twitter handle at Dylanacious, Dylan, DylanCious. I think I'd be like remiss if I didn't like do a little damage control and just like pimp some awesome Denver bands. There's an up and coming one named Oxy Daisy that's releasing their debut album in like 2 weeks at the High Dive. The Velveteers are like an incredible band that I think is one of Denver's best rock bands. If you like the White Stripes or Trent Reznor, check them out. They're great. There's also just like, you know, if you're in Denver, there's a, speaking of awesome female bands, the Velveteers, like their front woman's like a 20-year-old woman who's just so badass. But Charlie Bliss is coming to play here May 11th, I think, in Denver. They're like an amazing like 90s-ish rock band. Other than that, obviously, like, you know, I recommend you guys all just like spend 18 hours in Zelda cooking like hot buttered apples and watching the moon rise.
You'll need that for the fight against the Minotaur.
Yeah. And I think like if I could say one album, that Phoebe Bridgers debut album, Stranger in the Alps, is like remarkable. Like what, like the best album so far of the last 12 months probably.
Snail Mail and Phoebe Bridgers.
Phoebe Bridges.
I'm gonna remember that.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get out of there, quick plug and shout out to Mr. Brad Bogus. We are gonna miss you terribly, my friend.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you for being very awesome.
Yeah. I appreciate
He's still
it.
Very much a part of the show.
He's still gonna be a part of the show, but. Like,
are you gone? It will, yeah, I'm gone.
It
I'm force ghosting.
Like, we're serious this time. He won't be a regular president.
That's right.
As much.
Until I come back to Denver again, which hopefully will be sometime in the next few months. But yeah, I should be contributing content after the fact. But thank you, Hugh. I appreciate it. It's been great. This has been one of my favorite things I've ever worked on. So that's like legit.
Yeah.
No
doubt. It's going to be weird not having you here, man.
I know, Dylan. I mean, after all this time. Right on. Well, we're going to go ahead and sign off. Make sure you follow Nerd AF at Nerd AF Show on all the socials. If you're listening to us on iTunes and Stitcher, the single greatest thing you can do for us is rate and review this podcast on those platforms. We don't like to beg, but obviously we do put a lot of work into this. And the only way other people see it is if you actually show your love in that way. We love it when you comment and share on Facebook, of course. But really, if you could rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher, you'd be doing us a major solid. So that's what we have for this week. On behalf of Hugh Johnson and Richard Williams, I'm Brad Bogus for the last time. Peace out.
Nerd AF is a production of F420. We are hosted this week for, we believe, the final time, actually, for real. Rick, we might be promising Brad Bogus, and then every week by the venerable Richard Williams and Hugh Johnson. We are produced by Andy Caldwell and Vince Chandler.
Keep listening, keep liking, keep reviewing. We love you all. If I ever see you, I promise I'll high-five you in the name of Brad. Fortunately, Brad out.